What's going on, everybody? Welcome to another episode of the Leadership Lean In podcast, where we are leaning in to the subject of leadership, trying to get a little bit better in our leadership. Make sure that you subscribe to wherever, whatever platform you are listening to this podcast on, subscribe to our podcast and make sure you don't miss any of them. By the way, this is the final episode of season one. That's right, people. We're doing three seasons this year. Season one, season two, season three. This is episode six of season one. We will take the month. That's pretty cool. The month of April off for the podcast, and then we will resume May 1 with the emails and the podcast. We're excited. We have some amazing guests coming on in season two. I mean, probably the best lineup. But today, the one and only, the GOAT. You're going to hear me say this in the podcast. The GOAT, the greatest leadership teacher of all time, in my opinion. This is my opinion. None other than the great, he has written 86 books, people. Dr. John Maxwell is in the house. Make sure you like, subscribe, share this one. This is the guy. This is the one. This is the guy. In 1999, my dad started feeding me his content when I was in Bible college, and I have been listening to and reading this guy's material for so long. When we started this podcast, never in a million years did I think, oh yeah, we'll start Leadership Lean In, and for sure, John Maxwell will come on. No way, no how. I can't believe it. We are so honored. So come on, let's check it out. Dr. John Maxwell, Leadership Lean In, episode six, season one. Let's go. Oh, the one and only Dr. John Maxwell, thank you so much for taking the time to be with us.
It's great to be with you, Chad. I'm still looking for the one and only, but John's here. Until we find the one and only, do you mind if I just talk to you about leadership a little bit today? How's that? Huh?
You are in the stage of life where you get an emoji next to your name. You realize that. And the emoji next to your name is a goat. You're the greatest of all time. You've become that. Like, all in the office today, I'm like, Dr. John Maxwell is doing Leadership Lean In. I never thought in a million years we'd have you. You're the goat. What does it feel like to have an emoji next to your name?
Well, I when I was young, I had a goat beside me too, but it wasn't the greatest of all time. It was just, there's old Billy Goat out there, and you know, he's just chewing and hacking away, and he probably isn't going to amount to anything. So, you know, yeah, I guess that you go from goat to goat, I guess, after a while. But you know what, Chad, just to be with you and to be with the people that love your leadership and follow you and are part of this podcast, it's just a real joy. Thanks for having me. I mean, we're friends. When I can help you, you know how to get me. You got my number. Call me.
You're the best. Well, we just had a terrific lunch together a few weeks ago in West Palm, and just having a meal with you, being on the pod, anytime I can be around you, my life is better, my leadership is better. And if there's anybody that I'm listening to when they're talking, it is you. I think I told you this, but the first time I ever spent time with you, I was tripping out because I thought I was in my car, because I listened to you in my car. When I drive, it's your voice.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
In fact, I want to talk, because no exaggeration. When I'm in the car, I'm listening to your audiobooks. Right now, I'm listening to your newest book, Change Your World. Talk to me about this book. I'm loving everything I'm getting out of it, all of the content. Talk to me about the genesis and the excitement you have about your newest book.
Well, Chad, first of all, the genesis begins, you know, when I was in my 20s. I literally had a staff member give me a book for Christmas, and the outside title was The Greatest Story Ever Told. And I thought, oh my gosh, this is going to be amazing. I opened up the book, and much to my surprise, the pages were blank. And her name was Eileen. I looked at her and said, it says The Greatest Story Ever Told on the outside. There's nothing on the inside. And she said, well, go to the front cover. And I turned to it, and she'd written me a note. Basically, the note said, John, your life is before you. You fill these pages with your dreams, your hopes, your desires. You write the greatest story ever told. And so this is before I ever wrote a book. I took that book home with me, and the next day, the first thing I wrote on the first page was, I want to make a difference. I just knew I wanted to make a difference. I didn't know, Chad, how I was going to make a difference. I didn't know when I was going to make a difference. I didn't know. I didn't even know why I wanted to make a difference, but I knew one thing. I wanted to make a difference. And so when people ask me about this book, Change Your World, and they say, you know, where did it start? It started in my heart, you know, at this, what would that be, 50 years ago? And what's beautiful is that I have learned and grown throughout my whole life. It's kind of like this book could not have been written until now.
Wow.
Because to write a book on Change Your World is quite quite audacious if you think about it. You're just kind of saying, well, let me help you change the world. Well, who are you? And so the things that I write about it, and Rob Hoskins co-wrote it with me, by the way, he's terrific. But the things we wrote about it were things that can help a person really make a difference in their life. And in a nutshell, and by the way, I didn't say change the world. That's overwhelming. I said change your world. But in a nutshell, I talk about the fact that Hope has two beautiful daughters, anger and courage. Anger at the way things are, and courage to make a difference. And this, if you kind of say, you know, I'm angry about the way things are, and I have courage to try to make a difference, then this is your book. If that's not where you are, really, you need to go read someone else's book, because this is for people who really do want to make a difference. And the essence of the book is that you can change your world if people can learn and live good values. And what we've discovered, and by the way, this is not a theory. We've been in other countries for 7 years. We've done this with millions of people in small groups now. And so we know what really works. And what's beautiful, Chad, is that when people learn good values and they begin to live them, they become more valuable. They become more valuable to themselves. They become more valuable to the family. They become more valuable to the coworkers. And so now there is what I call a values lift. And so this book is all about, we have to be able, we have a values deficit in most people's life. We have to be able to teach and share good values. And we do it through a table. We do it through small groups. In fact, you change your world one table at a time.
Yep.
So all we're really asking for people to do, in fact, I've been in the studio all day, so I've been talking about it, but I mean, this is the book right here, Change the World. But what we're asking people to do is just read the book and then start a table, just start what we call transformation table. And by the way, all the material, it's all online, it's all free. I mean, in other words, this is huge. This can make a difference in your life. But here's why the table works. Here's why small groups work. A few years ago, I was asked by United Nations to do the opening session when all the ambassadors of the countries came back. So I talked to all the ambassadors of the world for 2 hours on leadership. And of course, they're coming from different backgrounds, different types of government, different cultures. And I kept thinking, wow, what am I going to say that can keep them all on the same page with me? And so I did a two-hour teaching that day on three questions that followers ask of their leaders.
Wow.
And I said, this is going to work in any country, any culture, at any time. And I said, it's an intuitive question. If you go up and say, what are the three questions to a follower? They can't give it to you. But when I give you the questions, you'll say, yes, that's what followers ask. And the three questions are, do you care for me? Can you help me? And can I trust you?
Wow.
You know, the first one, do you care for me? It's all about your compassion, your heart.
Great.
Can you help me? It's all about your competence as a leader. Can I trust you? It's all about your character.
Wow.
So I taught that, and that day, that triggered something in my mind. Here's why I'm going back to small groups. In small groups, you best answer that question more than any other time. It's in a small group that you find out that people care for you, that they're trustworthy, and they can help you. Because we're all here. We're interacting. And so the magic of values training is in the small group. So the book is all about how you can take these values and have a table and share them, and we, all the material is totally free, and we're starting a transformation movement. We literally have helped millions of people overseas, and now we're coming to America, which we kind of need that, don't we, here?
Yeah, right. Wow. I mean, I love those three things. I've never heard anyone say that. I'm not to that part of the book, obviously, but I just absolutely love that that concept and idea of a transformational table, because I do believe that you need that small community, that group. You can be vulnerable, you can be authentic, which most leaders struggle with, being authentic, being vulnerable, being walking in humility. And I think that if you can start to get to that place where you're honest with yourself and honest with others, then you could start to grow and develop. It leads me to my second question. You have been around.
Chad, as you get ready for that second question, Andrew, do me a favor. I would like for the people who watch this program, we have a free values assessment test that you could take, that where you just kind of check out. And so Andrew will find out how to get it. And later on, I'll just share with you that they can just go online, and it takes about 20 minutes, and they can get
the values assessment. I love that.
Okay. Question number two. I'm sorry, I interrupted you.
No. That's awesome. I'm thank you for offering that. That's huge. I want to go through that assessment. So what I was going to say, it leads me to my second question, which is, you've been around some of the best leaders in the world. You've been around some tables that most people listening to this podcast would go, I would give anything to be a fly on the wall to that table. What do great leaders have in common? When you get around them, what do you go, you know, I noticed this common thread in great leadership?
It's a great question, Chad. I think regardless of time, culture, country, the only thing that I can say that I think all leaders have in common is that all great leaders see more than others see, and they see before others see. They see a bigger picture. They really do. I'm not saying anything, and we're not talking about being smarter at all. They just see a bigger picture, and they see a picture quicker. They see it. And by the way, when I started 50 years ago as a leader, that before others see wasn't important at all. You just had to see more than others see. In fact, what's interesting, when people talk about leadership change over the years, when I started off, if you just saw more than others saw, even if you weren't quick, you would still be able to build something pretty big. Today, more is honestly being replaced with before. And today, it is who gets started first that almost always wins. And so they just do. So I tell people all the time, if you're in a group and everybody else sees the picture bigger than you and they see it before you, let me just share with you that that you're not the leader of the pack, that's for sure.
Wow. So now, when you get around these tables and you get around some of the best leaders in the whole world, and they're looking for you for values, they're looking to you for leadership, What is one of the main values? You go, you know, I'm around this table. It's a transformational table. This is, you know, it's a blessing to be here, but I know there's some influence around this table. They might not get everything that I'm saying, but this one thing here, I know this is a big one, and this could really leader shift them into the next level.
Well, I love the question, Chad. It's not what I say, it's what I do. When you get into a room with leaders, the room has got a lot of ego, a lot of success. And I always say, there isn't always enough ego room to sit at the table, but there's enough servant room to sit at the table. So what I do is, before I help them or give them my one thing, whatever it is that will take them to a level, I just try to take a servant spirit toward them and basically listen to them and add value to where they are, to where they are. And there's always a rush at that type of a table for everybody to get their thoughts out. And I'm usually the last one. I'm in no rush. Let me tell you something. A good thought works at the end just as it works at the beginning. So, you know, why get in the traffic jam in the beginning to try to get heard first. When it, wait till everybody's done, and then everybody is ready to listen to you. So I just really try to serve them. I was at a table. I've been at some pretty good tables, but I was at a table for. I went on a trip with some very highly successful people for 5 days, and I for the first, just ask questions, and when I found out where they were, I would maybe offer suggestions of how I could serve them or how I could help them. And it was truly magic. We were coming back from Europe on a plane, private plane, but we're coming back. And by the time we were coming back, they were now asking me questions. And I just had so it's not so much what I say, but it's how I serve them. Now, when I want to talk to somebody in leadership, I don't really want to know so much what they know, although that would be very helpful. I want to know what they're passionate about. So one of the things I ask when I'm in the room is I share with them, I ask them, what are you passionate about right now? What's happening right now that's just charging you up really big time? And let me share with you what I'm passionate about. And what I found is that the transference of ideas comes from the energy of passion more than it comes from the enlightenment of knowledge. And so I'm continually wanting to know what they're passionate about right now, because that's where they're red hot. And it also tells me about it's a great growth question, because once in a while I ask somebody what they're passionate about and they're not passionate about anything. And then I know they're living off of yesterday. They're clipping coupons on the past now. And that tells me a lot about how much time I really even want to be with them, because I really want to be with people that are learning something right now and are hot. And the reason that we didn't like college is because our professors were teaching out of 20-year-old notes. We were kind of basically telling our professors, why don't you go out and do something and come back and tell us what you did and get a little contagious. Wow. And so if that makes sense, I try to serve them.
I love
and
that.
And I try to find out where their passion is, because that whatever that is, that's going to be where the heat is for sure.
That is brilliant. I love that. One of the things I love about you, and I've stolen this line from you, as so many of your quotes and maxims, axioms, truths, I just feel like I just collect everything that you say. I'm stealing stuff that you've already said on this podcast. But one of my favorite lines that you say is, want more for people than from people. You use the word servant leadership earlier, and positioning yourself like a servant. That security, that confidence, that the idea is just as powerful at the end as it is the beginning. How have you been able to develop that servant leadership, I want more for you than from you kind of mindset? And what is it about aspirational, ambitious leaders that negate them from the ability to serve and to add value? Because what I find about a lot of leaders is that they usually can't add value because they're so ambitious to be valuable themselves.
Yeah, you're so spot on, Chad. Again, I was in my 20s, and I went to Dayton, Ohio, sat on the front row, and I listened to Zig Ziglar talk. And that day, he said something that just did a paradigm shift in my life. I was just a kid, but I was already going the wrong way as a leader. He just said, if you'll help people get what they want, they'll help you get what you want. And, it was like the light came on, and I thought, oh, I've done this backwards. I'm asking people to help me all the time. Get on my team, join my team. Here's my train. Here's where I'm going. And I was recruiting people to me. And all of a sudden I said, I've got this turned around. I don't need to do that. I need to go put people first. I just did a pivot. You talk about a pivot in COVID-19. I did a pivot. This would have been, again, this would have been in the 1970s. And I said, I'm going to do that. I'm going to intentionally add value to people. And what I didn't realize is what an asset that was for me, because people migrate to people that add value to them. And in fact, I've watched people rise up in a company, not because they were so good in their own expertise, but because they added value to the people that were going up. And they said, I got to have John with me. Come on, Chad, you got to go with me. I know what you do for me. So
amazing.
So I would go back to Zig and I said, okay, I'm just going to add value to people and I'm going to serve them first. And of course, when I went into the pastorate, that really worked well. But I just understood that that if you're patient, now let me just say this: ambition. Now, Jim Collins in his book, I Think It's Good to Great, I think is the one he talks about it seems like a dichotomy, the tension between a forceful will and a humble heart. And it almost doesn't seem that it should exist. But what I find is great leaders, they are building a wall and they cannot come down. So they're very much into passion of what they're building and growing. And so they're not going to get distracted by the people who want to kind of get them off track. But they also have a real sense of a gratitude and appreciation for the people that they have around them that have helped them. And when I turned 40, and I did a kind of a halftime assessment on my life, I was a little disappointed with where I was. And so I said, okay, let's reflect here. Why am I not exactly where I thought I would be? And I came to the conclusion that I hadn't given the time, my best effort and time to my team, and that I hadn't really equipped and trained them and empowered them well. And it was out of that time that I wrote in the 21 Irrefutable Laws of Leadership, I wrote the law of the inner circle. Those closest to you determine the level of your success. And so at that point, I said, okay, that I'm going to give my best to the best and my team. And again, that has had a humongous return in my life. I'm 74 and I am surrounded by the best leaders, the best people. And I'm very grateful for that. But I love, what was it? Cousas Imposter said a leader takes the vision from me to we. And the problem is that egotistical leaders, they take the vision or they take everything from we to me. And when you stop loving your people, you should stop leading your people. Wow. I mean, there's a fine line, Chad, between motivation and manipulation. Just a fine line. I mean, it's so fine. Sometimes I don't even know when I cross it, but I have crossed it. And when I cross it, what's sad is sometimes I don't even know I crossed it until afterwards. And then I feel ashamed because I think, okay.
Wow.
Today I led people, but I led them manipulation is when I lead you for my advantage. And motivation is when I lead you for your advantage. And,
wow.
And they're worlds apart. And whenever I lack valuing people, I promise you, I'm a screw up ready to happen. The moment I quit valuing people, the question is, what are you doing for me? What are you doing for me? What are you doing for me? That's never a leader's question. We never do that. We lift our people. And we value them always.
I love that. I mean, you can't say it any better than that right there. And there's such a fine line between the motivation and the manipulation. And I always find that ambition, that aspirational leader, if it's not wrestled, if it's not tamed, if my motives are not worked out, I think that's why you need a transformational table. You need some community. You need some checks and balances in your life to check that ego at the door, to remind yourself, oh yeah, leadership is not about me. Leadership is all about others and adding value. And if there's fractures in me, I'm going to look for people to add value to me because there's emptiness there. But that's why it's so important that leadership starts with me. So I have something to give and I want to add. I believe I can add value to others. Now, you talked about 21 Irrefutable Laws of Leadership. That was my next question. The first book I ever read from you was 21 Irrefutable Laws of Leadership. I'm 19 years old. I'm in Bible college. My father hands me this book. And I'm telling you, I treated that thing like it was the Bible. I mean, I highlighted it and, you know, just took all the truths. Now, and I've always wanted to ask you this question. You already mentioned the law of the inner circle, brilliant law. What is your favorite law of all the 21? Is it the law of inner circle, law of attraction? What would, if you go, man, this one right here, I could write a whole book. Maybe you did write a book about this law right here in leadership. It is just, this one's proven time and time again.
I've been asked that question a lot of times, Chad. And I say that the law of the lid is my favorite law. The law of the lid basically says how well you lead determines how well you succeed. And basically the law of the lid says, if from a 1 to a 10, I'm an average leader, I'm a 5. This is my lid. What it says is my business, my congregation will come under this, but cannot go any higher. My leadership is the lid on my potential. And I love that law because what I teach is that you can lift your lid. You don't have to stay a 5. If you want to, you can become a 6 or 7. And by the way, every time I lift my leadership lid, look what happens to my organization. It automatically fills in that gap. I think I like that law maybe the best only because that's the reason to learn the other 20. If you understand that your leadership lid is going to determine how well you succeed in life, then you certainly will get that passion to lead. A funny story. I was lecturing on the book many, many years ago, and a guy came up to me, and I'm signing books, and he said, you know, I'm signing his book. He said, you know, John, he said, I disagree with one of your laws. And I said, oh, that's okay. So I signed the book and handed it back to him, but he didn't move. He said, I don't think you heard me. He said, I disagree with one of the laws. And I said, that's okay. And so it was that moment that I realized that although it was okay with me that he disagreed with one of the laws, it wasn't okay with him that it was okay with me. And so I stopped. I said, it's just very simple. My name's John. I'm your friend. It is very simple. I didn't write the book to make you happy. I wrote the book to help you. You know, I'm a leader, not a clown. And it's like somebody says, well, you know, I disagree with the law of gravity. Well, it's okay. It's all right. You just go to a 4-story building and jump off. You'll buy into that law real quick. You see, the laws don't really ask you. They just don't really ask you if you agree with them or not. They just work. And I spent 2 years working at the 21 laws. And I put it through the grid of time. It that law had to work regardless of the time. It had to work regardless of culture. It had to work regardless of gender. I mean, I had a whole grid. I think at one time I had like 58 of them, and I just kept reducing them down to to 21 laws. And then I had a guy, Chad, one time he comes up to me. I mean, I'm teaching on 21 laws of leadership, and he comes up to me. He's just a kid. He's just passionate. I loved his passion. He's a great kid. He just kind of leans into it. He said, okay. He said, I got this leadership stuff. I got it. He said, what's the one thing I need to know about leadership? And I've just finished the 21 laws. And so I looked at him. I thought, I got to match his energy. So I leaned into him. I said, well, the one thing you need to know about leadership, there's more than one thing you need to know about leadership. There are 21. Excuse me. And, you know, of course, we have a big laugh about it. But that's why leadership has to be, it's a process. It's not a book.
Yes.
It's not an event. It's not even a podcast. It's all this layered experiencing and
That's
learning,
it.
Practicing leadership. That, you know, sometimes people say, "Well, where did you get all of your answers?" Life. I got them out of life. You know, lead for 50 years and you'll be pretty smart too.
That's it. Reading. And, you know, I'll never forget this summer when we were having a dinner in Miami with you and Rich and I and a few of our friends. And the team had sent you a recent YouTube or a recent interview, and you said, you know, the team sends me stuff, you know, things that they think I should be watching or listening to. And I love that about you, that every day you write, every day you're receiving, because leadership is such a process. We call this podcast Leadership Lean In because we understand, by the way, you know, like Beyonce has the beehive. the Leadership Lean In podcast, we're the leaners, okay? So we just lean in. We just, because I believe this out of John 15, a biblical truth, whatever you lean into, it leans back into you. So if I say this is Solomon, put it around your neck, man. It's calling out in the street. So we're leaning into leadership, and we know that leadership truths and principles will lean back into our life. But I love what you're saying, because you know, it's not one thing, it's 21 things. Which leads me to my next question. What is the one thing I need to know that I don't know? What's one thing at I'm 41, I've got four kids and one minivan, Dr. John Maxwell, okay? I have four children, one church, one minivan, one wife. We are in Los Angeles, California. On the podcast, The Leaners, what's one thing we need to know right now that we don't?
The one thing you need to know is that the compounding of consistency. I never could have imagined my life would turn out as it has. I couldn't do, Chad, a goal-setting seminar with integrity at all. I would just have to tell people, no, I have I set goals? Yes. But am I where I set my goals? No, not really. It's been so much more. And so I ask myself, why is it more? And I come to the conclusion that the consistency compounds. You know, I was in a room with leaders. And in fact, the CEO of Random House recently shared with me that I've written more leadership material than any person's ever lived in the history of the world. And Chad, I looked at him and I said, you got to be kidding me. You have got to be kidding me. No. He said, we've done research on you. You have written more. There's not a man has ever lived in the history of this world, billions of people, that have written as much on leadership as you have. Jeez. And I looked at them and I said, how did I get here? In fact, when I wrote my first book, it was so exhausting and I was so terrible at it that I said, thank God I've written my book. That's over. Now I can get back to life. I thought I'm a one book man. And that was not any good. So, so I'll kind of hide that one. I had no idea. And what I would tell young leaders, people like you at 42, did you say, Chad? You're 42?
41.
41. What I would tell you is that find your calling, find your giftedness, and stay in that lane. Stay in that lane. You don't have to know a lot of things. You don't have to do a lot of things. Paul said this one thing I do. He didn't say these 40 things I dabbled in. And so I've always been very committed to stay in my strength zone and to stay in my, in the area of my calling and my giftedness. And little did I know that the return would be this big. And so what I tell young leaders, well, it's the Tyler Perry conversation that I had with him when we both agreed after our conversation that when you can afford to quit, you can't afford to quit. Wow. So right now you're this is you, Chad. And so you sit there and you could say, well, you know, I see a little growth, but what you don't see this. You see this, but you don't see this. And you'll never see this if you don't stay on this. You'll never will see it. You'll never. But then all of a sudden, one day it hits you. Look what I've accomplished in it, and that's extremely humbling. I tell people in the beginning, you're never as bad as people think you are in the beginning. But if you do it right, you're never as good as people think you are in the end. Wow. And when people talk about, to me and talk about how wonderful I am, I look at them and say, not really. I'm just consistent. I've just tried to help people. So here's what I say. Be consistent in your in your strengths, in what you do well, and then value people. I can promise you, you show me a person that stops valuing people, and I'll show you a person that's in deep weeds. I promise you. they're in deep weeds. The moment the value, the moment that we lose, and I mean, I value everybody. I value people I value people I don't understand. I value people that don't have my values. It doesn't matter. And people said to me the other day, they said, I think that's a little hypocritical. You say you value everyone. You said, you don't even know everyone. I said, I know I don't know everyone, but I know the God who created them.
Yep.
And if he values you, it's good enough for me that I'll value you.
That's right.
That's all I need.
So I love
if
that.
You just really value people, that's the only reason to lead anyway. And if you stay consistent, boy, it just seems like that'll get you where you want to go. Hopefully.
That is so well said. The consistency of that, the compound interest of that. And when you start, when you put your hand like this and you showed me the trajectory of what potentially could happen, one of the things that stood out to me was, okay, when you did that, I love that bad, good ending thought that you gave there. What kept you motivated all these decades? What kept you, if you're 40 going, I don't like the way things, you know, when you took your assessment at 40, and I don't like the, you know, where we are. What kept you motivated? How did you stay disciplined? How did you stay inspired? What are habits that I need in my life to ensure this will be the trajectory that I stay on?
Well, yeah, people say that I'm very disciplined, but I don't think that's true at all. In fact, just look at my body and you can tell it's not that disciplined. So, I mean, it just cracks me up. You see, here's the issue. What keeps me in the game is anticipation. I get up early. I got up this morning about 5:10. And, you know, started writing. And people say, well, you just, it must be a, no, I'm not, I don't set an alarm. I just wake up and I think, if I'll stick up, put on my robe and I'll go downstairs and I get my legal pad and my four-color pen, I'll start writing something that someday somebody's going to read and it's going to make a difference in their life. Wow. If you were in sales and you anticipated that the person you were going to ask for the commitment, if you anticipated they were going to say yes, you couldn't stop asking for commitments. You wouldn't even go home for dinner because, oh my gosh, you see, it's the anticipation of helping people and making a difference that keeps me in the game. Just as if I anticipate that nobody, that I'm helping no one, then why, you know, then I lose all my heart to do this work. So
right.
What, you know. For example, right now, a lot of pastors are discouraged because they don't even know how to count their church. They don't even know what they got anymore. I mean, they've lost their metrics, et cetera. And I tell people, you know, pastors, is that why you're in the game? Is it? I mean, that's kind of a finite little model you got that's not too hot. I mean, are you not in the game for life change and adding value and transformation? And are people lives, are they being changed? And if the answer is yes, then stay in the game, you know. And now, if the answer is no, then I think you got other issues you got to deal with. But it's the anticipation, and I can tell you at 74, my anticipation is greater than it was at 54.
Wow,
it really is, and I know it shouldn't be that way, but it is that way. And so I ask myself, why is it that way? And it's because I've just seen so many people's lives change. Not only does consistency compound, but I believe passion compounds and mission compounds. When you're in that sweet spot, you know, I mean, I think Caleb says, give me the mountain. I'm 80. Give me that mountain. And Caleb, why do you want that mountain? Because I anticipate great things in the promised land. So yeah,
it's
sad for me when leaders don't anticipate good things for their people.
That's it.
That's just a little sad for me.
That word right there, anticipation.
Yeah.
That spoke to me right when you said it. I go, that's it. That keeps me up. I resonate there. And everybody that's listening to this podcast, what drives you to read and write and study and go to the conference and fill in the blank? It's anticipation. There's more. That's how you can see it. That's how you can believe it. It's just living a life of what's next, not reading your own press clippings, not being so impressed with what you've done. You know, I always find the leader that's always telling me about what they've accomplished. I would just know it's the hourglass is ticking. You checked out because you're so enamored with the past. Great leaders, they just, I have to remind you of the books that you wrote, Dr. John Maxwell. I have to remind you of the impact because you're anticipating, and that's what keeps you getting up early in the morning.
Chad, if what I did 5 years ago still excites me, I'm in trouble.
Whew. That's it. That's it. I'm in trouble. And just
I'm excited about tomorrow. I'm okay. That was good. Yeah, good.
Thanks.
Now,
yeah.
I never leave something. I always go to something.
That's right. I got two books right now I'm working on. It's getting me up in the morning. It's my material that I'm focused on right now.
I can't wait for you to get them out so we can read them. The only reason we're not better is you're not getting your books out quick enough. So.
I love what you said about Change Your World. My favorite book is the book I just wrote. It's the best book was the one I just worked on. Okay, last question, because I want to be very sensitive and respectful to your time. Again, on behalf of everybody that's listening, we are so grateful for you, grateful for your life. I want to end with this question. Because I think out of COVID-19, many leaders faced what they felt like was failure. Now, the whole world shut down, so there's a ton of loss. Momentum of business, momentum of, you mentioned pastors already, momentum of ministry, fill in the blank. There was a significant amount of loss. One of my favorite books that I've ever read from you was Failing Forward. Mm-hmm. How do we move forward out of what felt like failure in 2020? How do we get up out of the rubble and charge ahead and dust off? I think most leaders are not afraid of failure. They're afraid of the identity of failure. How do we wash that off of our identity?
You know, I'm a big Winston Churchill fan. And every time I go to London, I go to his bunker. I could lead a tour in his bunker. I know it so well. And one of the things I loved about Winston Churchill is during the war, of course, London was getting bombed repeatedly. Is wherever they were bombed in the night, Winston Churchill would have his people take him to that site. As soon as the day was breaking, he would be on the site and he would be walking among the rubble. And basically what he was telling the people of London is, these buildings are broken and burned and lost, but I'm here and we're not lost. And we still have hope and we're still alive. And it was so interesting. Winston Churchill would run to the rubble. He would run to the problem. He would run to the failures. He would run to the devastation. He could hardly wait to get there because he wanted to be identified as the leader that was going to give them hope. The background is broken buildings, but I'm smoking a cigar and I'm walking into your life and I'm just saying, I'm here and we will make it and we will defeat Nazism. That's leadership. So, we talk about being identified with failure. He ran to it every day and said, this is how I connect with my people. I connect with my people by saying, I see the problem. I'm walking. I got the problem all around me. But the problem is not on me. We're still going to make it. We're going to rise and meet the challenge. And I think that in COVID, I think that honestly, a crisis doesn't make you, it just reveals you.
That's it.
And I think honestly that COVID separated the players from the pretenders. You see, I don't mind being identified with failure as long as I'm leading with hope. There are a numerous amount of losses I have to take and setbacks I have to take before I get to my destination. Who said it's all forward steps? It doesn't bother me at all to say, we backed up a few steps today, but guess what? I'm still taking steps. I'm back in the game. It's like my friend one time said, I'm never down. He said, I'm either up or getting up. And I think that's leadership right there. I'm not down. Do I like what's happening? No. Do I understand what's happening? No. Do I know what's going to end? No. Okay, now that we're done with that, I'm still in the game. I'm showing up. I'm smiling. Take a picture. Come on. Stay with me.
I love that. I love that. I'm either up or getting up. That is a great line. Well, again, I say this in the most sincere way. I'm grateful that they did all that research to discover that you have written more leadership content than anyone in the history of the world. Thank you for anticipating what is to come for your life. We are all better because of it. And you adding value to us helps us add value to others. So thank you for your time, and I honor you today.
Thank you, Chad. All that material, all that means is you to have that much material, you just have to be old.
Well, I love you, and I hope to. We're gonna tee it up soon, somewhere in the world. We're gonna tee it up.
Chad, it's your job to find me, and when we find me, we'll tee it up, buddy. Okay.
Sounds good. Love you so much. Was that not amazing? Hey, make sure that you check out the link that we're putting right here on the subscription to take that assessment test that he talked about in the podcast. We love you. We are off for a month, the month of April. We are off. We will be recording some content, but we will not be airing the content until season two starts. Make sure, again, that you like and subscribe and share. It means the world when you share Leadership Lean In, the podcast. We love you. Let's keep leaning in and growing. And like Dr. John Maxwell said, anticipating the great things to come. We love you. We'll see you next season.
My name's Preston Sprinkle, and I host the Theology in the Raw podcast. Theology in the Raw aims to help believers to think Christianly about theological and cultural issues by engaging in curious conversations with a diverse range of thoughtful people. I have conversations with a wide range of different guests who come from different perspectives, and no topic is off limits. Sexuality, abortion, politics, LGBTQ, warfare, violence, marijuana, immigration, you name it. If you have a theological or cultural issue that you have been wrestling with over 1,100 episodes, we've probably talked about it on Theology in the Raw. Along with conversations with various people, I also address questions sent in from my audience every month. And occasionally, I will talk about some of my latest research projects that I'm currently working on. Theology in the Raw is not for everyone. It is uncut, uncensored, and I don't give trigger warnings. So check out Theology in the Raw through your favorite podcast app.
Do you ever feel like you want to know more about the Bible, but that it's kind of hard to understand? Do you want to share your faith with your friends, but have a hard time figuring out how to do that? Do you want to learn how to connect the Bible to your real life? Well, then this is the show for you. My name is Rachel, and I'm your host. I've been a children's pastor for a long time, and one of my favorite things is helping kids learn how to understand the Bible. I think that sometimes people think that the Bible is just for adults, but God actually really wants kids to know about Him. So on this podcast, we're going to learn all about God's big story and how He shows Himself to us through the Bible. As we learn together what the stories in the Bible mean, we can learn how to live out our faith in our everyday life. Don't forget to subscribe to the show so you never miss an episode.